I've never heard a person walk out of the stadium and say, wow, I wish that game would have included more waiting.
He is an endless source of baseball and hockey knowledge.
Jose Berrios, el lanzador de Puerto Rico en el Clásico Mundial de Béisbol.
Sean Morosi, every week with Wyman and Bob.
You're being serious with me right now?
It's the perfect way to get you into the weekend. Conversation with this guy, one of our all-time favorites, is with us on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. He is John Morosi. How are you, my friend?
Outstanding, my friends. I'm here at beautiful Comerica Park, downtown Detroit. Wrapping up, it's very fitting that we're having this conversation because I'm sitting here in the press box, actually writing a column right now about the Tigers for MLB.com, and it was in this press box where, as a first-year writer for the Seattle PI in 2005, that I covered Felix's debut.
Wow.
That story is somewhere out there. I should find it somewhere on the Seattle PI website, which I believe still exists, that I could find that archive. But, yes, it was in this press box where I watched 19-year-old King Felix make his first start in the major leagues.
Nice. Well, the feelings have to be good out there. Tigers off to a very good start so far this season, whereas the Mariners, not so much, JP. We keep having to say this because there are some fans that have already jumped off the ledge. They said, that's it. I told you this team was going to stink. They're terrible. There's 155 games to go here. But it was not a great homestand. The offense was pretty much absent. And then the final game, I think, is what made it so bad because kind of everything failed. You just get your butt kicked. Kirby throws out a complete dud. The defense was ragged, to say the very least. The offense wasn't there. Just everything went wrong as they head out on this road trip. What do you take away from these first seven games of the Mariners?
Well, it hasn't been good, but I would also say it hasn't been a disaster either. You're at 3-4, and you still were able to win three ball games, basically, you know, close to 50%, without Julio really being himself at all. Polanco hasn't done much yet. JP hasn't done much yet. They're not getting anything out of third base yet, either, to speak of. France has been good. Of course, he'll be away for a bit because of paternity leave, so congratulations to Ty and his family there. I think Haniger has been good, but to your point, there has not been a lot to write home about offensively for this team. And I do think they'll get better. And we've said this before. You look at their last April, but I can't stress enough that last April is what cost them the playoff berth. And here we are a year later, and we're watching some of the same concerning elements. And I do think I'm encouraged that Stanek, for me, is a really important guy for them. He was able to already register a save. I think Munoz, I think overall, has been pretty solid. They have not been walking guys in a huge way that would concern me. Again, maybe they're not quite pinpoint yet. And you're, I think, curious to see how Hancock will respond in a more consistent body of work. But this, to me, is, I guess, it looks a little bit like the start a year ago, which is why I think maybe some Mariner fans are concerned, because they know that you can have some losses in April that become the reason why you're not playing in October.
John, you and I spoke, you know, just a couple of days ago, just about how important it is, April, May, and, you know, the emphasis on the team getting off to a good start, and how that's really what costs them at the end of the year when you think about it, you know, missing out on the playoffs, getting so close. From around the AL West, what is the reinforcement coming? Obviously, I know the pitching, but why do you stress so much for April, May, when you talk about what the Houston Astros have coming back and the Texas Rangers, for example?
Right. No, and that's a really key thing here for me, Ryan, is that both Texas and Houston, that their rotations are going to get better as the year goes along. And Houston, they had a dreadful first series against the Yankees, of course, but then they were able to come back and win the series against Toronto, including the no-hitter by Ronel Blanco, which is one of the amazing stories of the game so far this season. They're not a 2-5 team. They're going to be a lot better as time moves on, and their pitching will get more consistent. I think the Rangers as well, for them to start 4-2 is actually pretty good considering where their rotation is and the number of personnel they have on their IL at the moment. I do think for Texas, a little concerned about how long Josh Young may be out of their lineup for a while. Evan Carter, a really slow start for him, certainly much slower than I expected it would be. Wyatt Langford hasn't really gotten going yet either. I think he will. But those are teams that I think in the cases of both Texas and Houston, they're going to get better. I think, and it'll probably happen more towards May and into June. Whereas I'm just not sure when you talk about Seattle's ball club, especially when you look at the way the offseason went and the spending that they weren't really able to do. I think the Mariners, as they are now, this is the team they've got for the foreseeable future. Certainly, they obviously expect that they'll be able to get some health back with Wu, but I think in general, this is a team that is likely the group that they're going to have for the next several weeks at the very least, and they're going to have to get more production out of this group. Julio has to do more. Polanco has to do more. And the reason is that I think the other teams are they have the potential to put some distance between themselves and the Mariners here in relatively short order.
Yeah, the entire lineup outside of Ty France, Mitch Haniger, and Josh Rojas needs to do more. I mean, it's just that's the reality. At what point, though, do you, JP, as a veteran of watching this game and covering this game, at what point in the season do you look at a team and say, I've got a good idea of who they are? Here's what they do well. Here's what they don't do well. This is who they are. Is it 30 games into a season, 40, 25? Where do you have a marker?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think it depends. I mean, let's take the Dodgers, for example. They haven't played a ton this season yet, but we know what kind of team they are. As you mentioned in the break coming back, that they lost the game at Wrigley, but I think we know who the Dodgers are. But we know what that team's all about. Honestly, I'm sitting here in Detroit. The Tigers are 6-1. They're winning close games. Their bullpen has been excellent. They almost in some ways remind me of the way the Mariners played a couple of years ago when they made the playoffs, that kind of a ball club that's pitching heavy and just enough timely hitting. I think the Mariners, in a lot of ways, I feel like I know who they are as a team. They just haven't executed yet. They've kind of given away some winnable games and then maybe kicked away a game that just got a little bit out of hand against Cleveland there and the 8-0 game. But I feel like I know who they are. They're a team that is still heavily dependent on their pitching, and they're a team that they need their situational hitting to get a lot better than it's been. And this is where you would have thought, based on where they're at in their arc. And again, I stress that it's a week, but they are a group that you would like to say will find ways to avoid having a stretch where they are at this stage, let's say, of the standings at this moment in time, where the offense has been this inconsistent. You would have liked to have said, okay, yeah, one game offensively going south, okay, I get it. Two games in a row, that you're starting to get a little bit concerned. It's now gone on for, I think, a bit too long relative to the veteran nature of this club. And if this happens to a young team, again, like the team I'm watching here in Detroit, has got still a lot of young hitters, you expect some growing pains. Seattle's at the point now where this is not a bunch of kids anymore. I mean, they should be able to ride this out a little better and I think translate some of these pitching performances into a little bit more of a consistent track record of winning, just based on how long we've had conversations like this about a lot of these same hitters that we're talking about.
JP, you've been traveling quite a bit lately, you know, covering games, LA, Detroit. So you get to have a lot of conversations and you know everyone in the game. What's the general consensus of the Oakland A's situation with Sacramento next couple years announcing that and everything everything regarding what they're in for the next couple years?
Yeah, it's going to be a turbulent time, and obviously it'll affect especially their fellow AL West teams, because it's now a new city to travel to, a new ballpark to play in, and so it's going to be part of the Mariners' story, obviously, in the next several years that it's a new city to go to. But I think from a very specific case with Oakland, you know, we talked to Mark Kotze earlier today before the game, and I think he did a very good job of talking about just the issue that's there and the reality of confronting what they've got. I think it's going to be tough, though, for them to compete for a while. If we're being honest about this, you think about if you're a free agent and you want to have the ability to go sign somewhere and know where you're going to play and know about the facility, know about the chance to compete and win, it's going to be difficult for them to sign free agents in this time. They can't even necessarily say for sure when the new ballpark is opening in Vegas. It's that right now it's 3 years, but it might be 3 years plus in Sacramento because of the situation and not knowing when exactly there's going to be a stadium built in Vegas. So it to me is a concerning point, I think, for Oakland. And I think, again, Mark Kotze did a very good job of speaking about where the team is, but it's a young group. They're probably not going to get a whole ton of free agents. I mean, I was just looking at the roster and the hitters in the lineup. I mean, you follow the AL West closely. Geloff, we know, J.D. Davis, and then Brent Rooker, Langeliers, Nevin, Toro, Blade, Hernandez, and Allen. That was their starting lineup today with Sears on the mound. I mean, these are not names that necessarily are household names for baseball fans, and I think it's just going to be difficult for them to compete for a while. And that is an issue that I think – is something that baseball is and frankly should be concerned about, because you're having one of your 30 member clubs just not able to compete at the same level as everybody else. It's almost similar to what the Coyotes have done in hockey. Now they've actually played better than what I expect the A's to play, but they're playing in a college rink, and it's not what the NHL should be about. And this similarly is not what MLB should be, but you've got in this situation now 3 years plus of a team having to play at a AAA facility.
Well, and you use the word not able to compete. I would say they're not willing to compete. And that goes back to John Fisher, who I think is just a complete turd. I mean, do you talk about somebody who's bad for the game, JP? I mean, come on, man. This guy is pinching pennies at every turn. He's taking every bit of revenue that comes in from the big clubs and the luxury tax, and he's putting it right into his pocket. He's not reinvesting it. And Buster Olney sent out this tweet, which I thought was really good. I want to get your reaction. He said, "It appears the difference between what Oakland offered and what the A's wanted was about $35 million or so over 3 years, or about the same that the Angels are paying reliever Robert Stevenson." It says, "Meanwhile, right, owners overseeing an industry that's worth many tens of billions of dollars stand by and watch their weakest franchise put on this cheap circus and do nothing. It's incomprehensible, and it's terrible. It's a terrible business decision." I couldn't agree with him more, but my question to you in light of what he had to say there is, what recourse do the other owners have? Could they force his hand? Could they say, "John, you're not willing to spend, you can't spend, whatever the problem is, you have to put a representative product on the field and you're not doing it"? Could they force him out, or what? Buster's calling on other owners who are just standing by watching. What recourse do they have?
It's a great question. The first and foremost thing is that if there was going to be a rejection of him and trying to force him to either sell or just sort of squeeze him out of his position, they would not have approved the move to Vegas. That would have been their chance to, as a group of owners, say, no, we're not going to give you permission to go there. And in fact, the reason is that we wouldn't want you to own the club any longer. If they wanted to make that statement, that was the opportunity to do it back during the time when those conversations were happening, and they didn't do it. So clearly the appetite isn't there. And I do think that in terms of what recourse could happen, there have been, if you go back to the Frank McCourt ownership with the Dodgers, there have been unpopular owners who have kept their teams for a very long time in this sport. And there's not really much that the rest of the group can do except for make, whenever there's like a transition of ownership or transition of shares, as they did with Jeff Morad years ago, and they basically blocked Jeff from becoming the control person of the Padres, they could do that, or they could have blocked him from going to Vegas, and they didn't. So clearly, I think the directive appears to have come from the league and Central Baseball that it behooves the sport and behooves the rest of the owners to get this team to Vegas as soon as they can. But even that has proven to be problematic, because I think part of what you're alluding to is that, you know, revenue sharing goes to the A's right away, and revenue sharing in many ways and or the local TV contract is in excess of what the payroll is.
Yes.
So they're actually operating in the black right away, which is not really a great look in terms of what you're spending out and what you're taking in. But again, all of these things, you had your chance to kind of squeeze him a little bit more when the relocation thing came up, and that sailed right through. So at this juncture, I do think this, that if in the big picture here, if the message came from the commissioner that they believe that if you're saying, okay, owner of the Milwaukee Brewers, the St. Louis Cardinals, Seattle Mariners, anybody out there, that we believe that you will end up paying less revenue sharing once this team goes to Vegas. And my job is to get this team to Vegas so that way you stop paying revenue sharing to this team after X number of years. That's the one thing that in owner speak says, oh, so you're going to save me money? Sounds great. Go ahead and do that. And I think that's kind of the way that they've looked at things. But I agree that in the interim, it's not a great look. And I think that the reality is, too, why did Fisher decide to go to Sacramento instead of staying in a major league facility in a major league town? I think that the relationship, and again, he bears responsibility for this, the relationship has gotten to the point where anytime he goes to the ballpark, there's all these signs, sell the team, the fan protests. I just think from a human emotional standpoint, he's like, hey, if I take the team up the road a little bit and go to Sacramento, at least the fans there might not be booing me all the time because I will have brought a baseball team to them for at least 3 years. Whereas in Oakland, I don't think he was posing for too many happy selfies with people there. So I just think on some level, it was probably just his own personal comfort. And I suppose through that lens, I can understand why he made the decision that he made.
JP, I feel like this conversation with you, one of the most positive, uplifting people, has been, you know, kind of very, very critical of different things around the league. So I'm going to stay with it. The uniforms article came out today where MLB is kind of looking at Nike and saying, listen, they've kind of like let everyone know that Nike's trying to correct some of these uniform issues. Again, I go to you here because you have conversations with more than any people that I know in regards to around the game. First of all, what's your general take on, you know, the lettering on the back, the see-through pants, the grays, the different shades of gray and everything else? And what do you think the future looks like? Do you think it's a situation where Nike corrects this early and they can start fixing and fix these jerseys and people can be happy, or is this going to be an ongoing thing for the entire season?
Well, Ryan, it's an important question. And here's the reality of it. When this was an initial issue at the start of spring training and there was a lot of conversation about it, I think the hope was that in time, and listen, some players from a standpoint of breathability and it will likely become maybe more of a, there might be more of a positive trend to it when it gets hot and they say, yeah, it is a little more breathable and I feel better in it. Maybe that will be the case. But I think the idea early on was that, okay, if we just kind of get into spring training, maybe the conversation will just kind of go away. It hasn't gone away. I mean, clearly it hasn't. And so it is a concern of the players, obviously, on some of them like it, some of them don't. But I think ultimately the question will be this: are the jerseys popular among fans? Do they like them and do they buy them? And if broadly speaking, fans don't buy them and don't love them, then I think that the incentive to change will be higher. And I am going to be very curious to see where those price points come. And listen, I respect the voices of fans on this. And if they're going to spend their hard-earned money on a jersey, they want it to look and feel major league. And if they feel like the current one is more of a replica feel, they're not going to be thrilled about it, and their pocketbooks will speak to that. So that, I think on some level, Ryan, it is both an issue that needs to be remedied, and it's also one that I believe the market will remedy. But like if people don't like the jerseys and don't buy the jerseys, remarkably, the jerseys will change. Like, it depends on, like, by
it's
how
a miracle.
Much, by how much? Who knows? But like, it's amazing. Like the third jersey that teams have had, or the City Connect jersey that teams have had that aren't popular, they just sort of fade away because people don't buy them anymore.
It's magic.
And the ones that are great, like the, you think about the Mariners having had different jerseys over time. The Mariners have had some great looks. And guess what? People that like those jerseys will buy them back. People, the commercials that do great with Julio and Ichiro together, no fly zone, that's going to get a bazillion clicks from now until the end of time. Guess what? They're going to do more commercials like that because people like them. And so the jerseys that people don't like, I just don't think they're going to sell as much. And I think as a result, we will probably see some modifications to that moving forward.
John Morosi, always a ray of sunshine, always be able to put a positive spin on things. We appreciate you, my friend. Have a great weekend, and we'll talk again next week.
Sounds great, guys. Yes, I believe that situational hitting, let's hope this, that by the time we have our conversation next week, that the Mariners' situational hitting offensively, that they're in a better spot in a week than they are right now. That'll be my hope, okay?
Small ball, baby. Play some small ball. Turn it back in 1988. Let's do it.
Ryan, shorten up. Quick to
that's
the ball.
Right. That's
use the
right.
opposite field.
Two-strike approach.
I'm not a hitting coach, but these are things that smart baseball people have told me for a long time.
Hey, one of the most exciting moments of the homestand was J.P. Crawford laying down a bunt.
Oh, you love that bunt.
I loved it.
Hey, yeah, you love it.
One of the great moments in Mariner history was Carlos Guillen's bunt.
Yes, against the White Sox. Yes.
I remember that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Have a great weekend, John.
All the best, guys. Thank you so much.
There you go. John Morosi with us each and every week. Always a great conversation with him. It's hard to be in a bad mood when you're talking to John, right?
I know. It's Friday afternoon. I'm sitting here. I had to ask him about the jerseys, though.
Oh,
because,
yeah.
He talks to more people than he knows more people around the game.
Yeah.
And so you want to make sure it's being spoken about outside of your little circle.
Yeah. Good stuff from John. If you guys just tuned in, you missed part of that conversation, didn't catch it all, it will be available on the podcast page at seattlesports.com after the show. Coming up, there's an obvious pick for our Y-Man of the Week. We'll get into all of that. Coming up, it's Wyman and Bob with Ryan Roland Smith, and this is Seattle Sports on 710.
Why, man? Why?
Lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
He's a habitual line stepper.
What were you thinking? What are you doing?
Why are you the way that you are?
It's the Why Man of the Week.
Why Man is presented by Mazda of Everett. A reminder, we've got Mean Text coming up in the next segment, and then we will turn you over to the Mariners pregame show, so you still have about 15 minutes to get in your work. Get in that creative stuff you've been working on. The mean shots you're going to take at us, 866-979-3776, powered by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. How have they done so far, Lefko?
Let's just say the people at StubHub are smarter than our listeners.
Oh, boy. There you go. If you heard the story earlier, that was not a compliment by any stretch of the imagination. So I guess that means
I got to get him fired up. Wyman's not here. So someone's got to encourage him.
Not here to call him stoned and unemployed and drunk and all the things he says. So basically, Lefko's saying you're dumb. Too dumb. I don't know. 866-979-3776, powered by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. All right. Our first entry is one we've gone through today, but it's just it's still just so unbelievable to me that this guy's an owner of a major league franchise. Ryan, we've talked about him. I feel bad for the players on that team that don't have an option to play elsewhere. You just want your chance at being a big leaguer, but you almost feel like you're not really a big leaguer, especially playing in a minor league stadium for the next 3 years after this season. It's not going to feel like did I make it? Did I? It'll feel that way when you get on the road, not at home. But this is John Fisher, who rarely speaks out in public. And when he does, he's just lying through his teeth, just talking about how amazing it's going to be, how excited he is to have his team occupy a stadium in West Sacramento.
I just want to say how excited I am to be here in West Sacramento in Sutter Health Park, celebrating a momentous day for this community and a momentous day for our 123-year-old franchise. We're excited to be here for the next 3 years, playing in this beautiful ballpark, but also being able to watch some of the greatest players in baseball, whether they be athletics players or Aaron Judge and others, launch home runs out of this very intimate, the most intimate ballpark in all of Major League Baseball for the next 3 years.
Ugh.
Ugh. People chuckling in the some idiot who has no idea about the entire situation, just chuckling along in the background, like some rich whatever trying to. Here's the thing that gets me is this guy's barely spoken publicly. I didn't even know what his voice sounded like.
Yeah.
You know, and I've asked people around the A's, like, hey, what do you got? Well, we don't really hear from him too much. He doesn't talk a whole lot. He just kind of sits in the background. And here he is, video of him talking about an intimate ballpark and watching Aaron Judge
smash home runs against his team.
Plays against the New York Yankees. Plays for the New York Yankees. How about that?
Yeah. Yeah, he says whether it's an athletics player, doesn't name any of the players on his team, and talks about the appeal of the opposition coming in here, launching missiles over the fence against his team in this intimate setting.
Get a real thrill.
which will be good for him because it won't look nearly as empty as the Coliseum has looked for the past decade. You know, nobody shows up there. It's a bad building. I get it. I get the want, desire for a new building. But this is a guy who's a billionaire who is clinging to every penny he's got,
right.
And he's taking in every penny he gets from revenue sharing and not putting it back into his product. He's a horrible owner. Horrible. He talks about a franchise that's, 123 years old, whatever it is, and making a mockery of that franchise. And I can't imagine, Ryan, you would know this better than anybody, but he's not, first of all, he's not going to outbid any other franchise for a free agent. And if you're a free agent that has any options whatsoever, if you've got any option outside of the A's, you're taking it, right? It doesn't matter if it's the Marlins are 0-8 right now. They're going to be bad. The Rocky, I don't know. Pick a bad team out there. The only reason a free agent would go to Oakland is just because they're clinging to life in terms of their career.
Well, yeah, and you don't want to relive your minor league days either, because you're playing minor league. You're basically playing in a minor league ballpark. That's all it is. It's brutal. And look, John Morosi, we spoke to him, you know, earlier, and you know, I feel like he kind of took it easy on the whole situation, and I get it. I understand why that is. But he mentioned the fact, he goes, oh, you know, maybe it's an emotional thing. He wants to get out of Oakland as quick as he can. But it's going to follow him regardless. I'm not talking about physically. Even if people want to, you know, make the drive down to Sacramento and go and protest out, which they will, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
But it's going to follow him 100%. There is no, like, if it is a psychological or emotional thing where you are just dying to get out of Oakland and out of that circle, it's just going to be magnified. The fact that you are playing in a 10,000-seat stadium 80-plus times, it's just, man, so bad. I feel bad for the players and just the morale of everyone who works in that front office, baseball ops, PR, everyone. Just what a terrible situation.
Well, and then there's the other people in terms of the Oakland Coliseum that will lose jobs, you know, that occupy that whether you're talking concessions, parking attendants, everything that goes along with the franchise occupying that space, those jobs are eliminated. So
Absolutely. Well, speaking of employees, one guy who he's very outspoken, yet he will never ever be outspoken critically. And I mean, look, he's employed by the Oakland A's. Dallas Braden, great guy, right? And he's very honest. And he had a tweet today. He just basically said, and I'll read it, was basically like, I don't know what to do. Like, I don't know if I can continue being here anymore because of this situation. And this is based off the news of the, you know, yesterday was one of the toughest days of my life. Thank you for the understanding. A's fans, we are in the same boat together, trying to figure out how to navigate this on the fly. Not sure there's a playbook for it. I truly have no idea what my future looks like, but it ain't, what did he say? But it ain't about me. I'm trying. Basically, he goes on and on and on talking about this might be it for him. If that's the situation where you're going to go to Sacramento, and this is a guy, look, he grew up in the area. He's always taken, he's always been very smart the way he's worded his phrases when he's talking about being critical of the A's who employ him. He's the color guy in their booth. But this is, I'm reading this going, man, that's how you know it's just straight. You know what? I don't care. I'm not going to be silent about this.
Yeah. Good for him.
Yeah. Good for him. Yeah. It's really bad.
One more here quickly. This is from Chiefs president Mark Donovan talking about the fact that the Chiefs, who have had a tremendous amount of success in World Series, Super Bowl titles out there in Kansas City, might have to look at other options outside of Kansas City if they don't get a new building.
I just know that for us, the Chiefs, we would have to look at all of our options.
Do those options include leaving Kansas City, Missouri?
I think they would have to include leaving Kansas City, but our goal here is that we want to stay here. And we're willing to accept a deal, which is actually better for the county to stay here.
There you go. So hang in that little, that implied threat. Well, we got to look at what's out there. I mean, the idea of the Chiefs leaving Kansas City, considering, you know, this is not an A's situation where nobody shows up and they've got no success and they can make a case for leaving. And I understand the building is out of date and they need to come to some agreement. But the idea and throwing that out there is sort of a, you know, this implied threat of, yeah, we'll take our business elsewhere is you just cringe when you hear those things.
Well, yeah, and also, too, right next door to them is the Royals, who basically got turned down. They wanted to have, like, a downtown ballpark.
Yeah.
Less seats, less of a footprint. And they had these big proposals, like, real proposals, not just some AI rendering like the A's throw out there every 2 months just to try and get their fans involved somehow of how exciting it could be. I mean, it was a real thing where the Royals really wanted to move into like a downtown spot, and that's right next to the Chiefs. So the Chiefs are dealing with the same thing, but you're right. I think that statement right there is basically just trying to get some momentum and threaten the fact that they're looking to, yeah, there's no way they live in Kansas City. Absolutely no way.
Yeah. All right. Coming up, last chance. Still have a few minutes to get them in. Mean text coming up. 866-979-3776. Powered by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. We'll see if Lefko was right about everybody. Was he wrong? He said StubHub makes you guys look like they're geniuses and you're not. Something along those lines. We'll get into your mean text coming up next. It's Wyman and Bob with Ryan Roland Smith in. This is Seattle Sports on 710.
Wyman and Bob.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
For those of you new to the program, this is what we do to end the show each and every week on Fridays. We take all the mean things you say to us and unveil them for all of you to chuckle at our expense. Today, we've got a guest. We've got Ryan Roland Smith in. I'm not sure how many have been directed at him, Lefko. You did prompt people to get involved by calling them dumb. So maybe most of them are directed at you. I'm not sure. But did that work? Did that light a fire?
Yeah, not really about hyphen. Some with me, some about
I'm
him.
I'm seeing a couple softballs here. Towards
okay,
me.
Wait. Yeah. Read one about you then. I haven't found it.
I'm scrolling through here. I mean, there was one ripping my career, but I do that on a daily basis, so that's funny. I enjoy it. But this one, Ryan loves mean texts from the 206. It is so much less painful than having to sit through dinner with his missus after calling her cheap on air. Now, hey, first of all, let me clarify, because she may be listening right now. Yeah. I never called her cheap at all. Right? I know Wyman loves to talk about how much she loves monster trucks, but, which gets a couple bad looks when I get home too. But I'm the cheap one, all right? She just has to live with it. That's the deal.
Yeah, she gets uncomfortable when you talk about your own cheapness.
Saving hundreds for retirement, all right? Hundreds of dollars.
I do like this one. There's a good one that just came in. Seth in Fresno says, hyphen looks like the kind of guy that challenges someone to a pickleball match and then never follows through.
Oh, boy.
Wow.
I'm the one not following through?
Yeah, I've given you venues. I've given you times. Yeah.
I should do some screenshots. The amount of text messages to Lefko saying, hey, man, just pick a time and day. Come on, dude. We need to take each other on. This is crazy. The fans want it. This has to happen. I need to show you the
trick. I'm good
shot,
at sending
paddle,
screenshots to people now.
Racket,
so I can...
whatever you call it.
Racket. Yeah. Well, you guys have to wait for the weather to get warmer, right?
No, this is great weather.
Indoors. Hey,
this is, it's cold out there right now.
It's be fine.
Look at the premier venue. I'm telling you right now, here in Edmonds.
I've offered to come up to Edmonds.
Shout out to Harbor Square.
Have you been practicing, Ryan?
No, I haven't. I'll say this again. I had a bad knee last year, all year long.
See,
I don't need to practice. I don't need to practice. Every time I pick that racket up, paddle, that whatever you call it, I get my shot down. I take on my wife. We've got some free time. And I tell her, I'm like, that's the shot that's going to beat Lefko. She goes, yes, I know that. I get it.
Yes.
It's on.
That's it.
So she's heard you say that a lot. Okay. Oh, that's good.
What else do we got, Lefko?
We got one. This must have been from the start of the show. Someone was listening. 425 says, if you have to ask whether or not you should say a word on air, you should not say that word on air.
Yeah. Ryan, I wish you could have been here to see the look on Matt's face when you did that. His eyes got five times bigger, and there was a very emphatic shaking of the head.
Hey, I will say, I'm going to throw Bob, you and Dave Wyman under the bus, because I do listen to you guys very frequently. You guys say some words. I'm not going to repeat them. I'm like, hold on a second.
Oh, no,
that
no.
That can't pass.
No, we know. We know the guardrails. We know where to go.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, yeah.
Fair enough.
I couldn't tell you the last time I dumped Bob, but I could tell you the last time I had to use the dump button on Ryan Roland Smith, because it was an hour and a half ago.
Oh, man, really?
Why would you ask whether or not you can say the word and then just say the word, Ryan?
I don't
understand the logic of that.
Because I'm sitting at home. I'm too comfortable. I'm wearing sweatpants. You know what I mean?
He's got his feet up. He's got a drink in his hand.
Exactly.
So good. 509 says, Bob sounds like he should be hosting Jeopardy, and Ryan sounds like he should be on the Animal Planet talking about wrestling Crocs, and Dave sounds like he definitely had too many concussions close to being the water boy.
I like it, man. Wow. That's elaborate. The Jeopardy, explain it, Bob, talk me through the Jeopardy. What is about your voice?
I'm not really sure.
Maybe a question thing? I don't know.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know. Maybe I'm just a professional broadcaster. I sound like a wrestling. I don't know. That's how I'll take it.
I'll take this as a compliment. Wrestling Crocs, that's for sure.
Wrestling Crocs. 206 just said, hey, Ryan, it's called a paddle.
Yeah.
Whatever. Paddle racket. Same thing.
Yeah, 425 says, Ryan doesn't play pickleball. He plays Vegemite ball.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Speaking of being at home, I gave little Lennox, man, some Vegemite this morning. He just pushed it aside. Did you really? Oh, yeah. Are you kidding me? Hey, by the way, I've got like a lifetime supply. If anyone needs any Vegemite, I do have a ton of it. I think I'm joining. I might be out with you guys next Friday or something out at the.
Yeah. Edgar, are you coming out?
If you're around.
I need to bring some of my supply, dude, because we had an international night at my kid's school. And no one ate it. So I've literally got tubs of it.
Do you like it, though? Do you actually
do.
Like it?
Yes, and I'm not just trying to do some, like, shtick, Aussie, like, whatever. I actually do like it. It's good stuff.
Does your wife like it?
No, she doesn't.
Kids clearly don't like it.
Sometimes I sneak it in there with some cheese or whatever. But no.
Is it? I don't even actually know what it is. Is it supposed to be healthy?
It's a yeast extract, apparently, whatever that means. But no, see, listen, I'm not the best at cooking, right? So if it's lunch, I'm running late, and the kids need to eat or something, I might just sneak in a little bit of Vegemite on the bread. And, off you go. Should give it a go.
360 sure. says, only Lefko would get fake tickets from a legitimate website. He probably annoyed the computer.
That is true, because when you started talking about tickets and whatnot, I'm like, dude, you've been ripped. You've been ripped off, man, online. It probably said stub nub or something like that. He went to the wrong website.
Yeah, no. One of them was correct. I just was missing the other one. So it worked out. All right, I'll keep the ones about me going here. Let's see. 253. Can we do less Lefko today? Not no Lefko, to be honest. I've come to enjoy his squeaky quibbles, just less. Lefko light, if you will.
Lefko. Yeah, I saw that one come through. That was funny. Squeaky quibbles. Not sure what that is, but that's kind of a funny description.
Yeah.
Somebody just sent a long one on Salk, and there's no punchline. It's just mean. It's just not one we can read. They're just really a dislike, it appears. They're missing the point of mean text. There should be some humor to it in there somewhere.
253, Bob, they're coming after you.
Okay.
Bob, it took me about 5 minutes to set up my free T-Mobile MLP.TV. There must have been a lot of user error going on.
You shut your face. I spent hours on the phone with technicians, with techs that know how to handle that kind of stuff.
Is this just an exaggeration? Like, did you really only spend, what'd you say, hours? You spent hours on the phone? Is that what you said?
Hang on. All of a sudden, my mic got switched here on this end.
Oh.
I think it's on my end.
Well, we're about to wrap up the show. So that's what we're trying to tell you here.
Man. Hold on a second. That's like me saying some bad words. All of a sudden, I started talking about T-Mobile in a bad way, and the gods came down and cut off the transmission.
All right. Well, I can't hear anything Ryan's saying, but we're going to wrap it up here. So I want to thank our guest today, John Morosi, for joining us on the program. And thanks to Ryan for sitting in with us as well. It's all there for you on the podcast page after the show at seattlesports.com. Just click the podcast tab. Click on our picture and it'll be right there waiting for you. Have a great weekend, everybody. We'll talk to you on Monday with Wyman and Bob.